This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Hi, I'm Greg Watson, and welcome this week to Property Matters, the show where we talk all things real estate, whether it's buying, selling, renting, leasing. If you're a landlord or a tenant, there should be something in here for you. I'm here without Billy today. He's having a day off, and you've got my dulcet tones for the next 25 minutes or so. So let's start with what's happening in the Manawatu market in terms of the sales market. And it's quite interesting because we were looking at figures of the median rateable value in Palmerston North. The median rateable value is $395,000. The median listing price is $419,000. That's $26,000 above the rating value. The median selling price is higher again at $425,500. That's $30,000 above the median rateable value. So if you have had an update on your rateable values, that's where those figures are at. Median rateable value, $395,000. Median selling price, $425.5. Now, I know what you're thinking, possibly, and that's how can the median price of selling be higher than the median listing price? Well, that's possibly because there is strong competition for buying properties, and most of the time there are multiple offers on properties. So you're competing directly up against others, or at least I should say indirectly, that is encouraged to put in your best offer and to see where things go. So even though the rateable values haven't been out too long, the median selling price is already $30,000 above. And the median price increase on year over year up to end of April 2019, we haven't quite got the May stats yet, was 16%. So median price increase of 16% compared to a year ago. So property continues to perform well. If you own a property, that's good news. So the equity is building up. You may be able to use that for some other life goal or possibly to buy a rental property. Also, as well as that, with the prices going up, of course, it does make it harder for people who are looking at purchasing rental properties or their own first homes at the moment. In particular, the first home buyers are affected in the fact that the bottom end keeps moving upwards. If you're unsuccessful in buying a home, within a few months, the prices can be somewhat higher. And I noticed on interest.co.nz just the other day that the Reserve Bank is saying that they are in the strong position of having both further room to cut the official cash rate and using some other unconventional monetary policy options if they require. So this is according to the Central Bank's Assistant Governor and General Manager of Economics, Financial Markets and Banking. Wow, what a title. And that's Christian Hawksby. Now, in a speech to the Bank of Japan's Institute for Monetary and Economic Studies, Hawksby said the Reserve Bank's central view is that New Zealand's interest rates will remain broadly around current levels for the foreseeable future. However, the Reserve Bank needs to be ready to adapt to changing conditions in order to meet its objectives when confronted with unforeseen developments, he said. In fact, he said that in New Zealand, we are in the strong position of having further room to provide conventional monetary stimulus if required using the OCR. So very strongly telegraphing there that there could still be changes downwards if required to the OCR. And of course, many of the banks look at that when setting mortgage interest rates. So if the OCR continues to drop, we still have got the room to do it, even though it sounds low and it is at a historic low, there is still room to move there to help stimulate the market. And that leads us to an article that was in newsroom.co.nz, which says property market growth slow. Now, this is talking nationally And nationally, of course, we know it is massively affected by the 50% of volume, which is the Auckland market. So the value in the Auckland market fell by 2.1% a year ago to an average of just over $1 million. And that's where, as I mentioned earlier, Palmerston North has gone up 16%. Auckland's fallen 2.1%. So on newsroom.co.nz, they say that scrapping any prospect of capital gains tax and a cut in the official cash rate has done little to spur growth in the property market. And that's something that I was interviewed on as well, as to the fact that the capital gains tax hasn't come in and the government has said that they're not going to under this term. And and the official cash rate dropping did affect mortgage rates slightly, but overall it's not having a big effect on the market. So the QV senior consultant Paul McCrory said the main cities had caught the winter chills, while the more affordable regions were upholding growth. So that's where he says that the major centres are seeing the market soften, with Auckland continuing to record single-digit negative growth over the quarter, and even Wellington seeing values plateau over the last few months. He does say that at the same time, many regional centres are still very much in the upward stage of the growth cycle, as we are here in the Manawatū, and continue to achieve strong yearly and quarterly value increases. In my personal view, for those who are interested, educated view is that if you bought a house tomorrow in Palmerston North, it's likely, if it was bought at without being an over-the-top price, it's likely to rise by around 10% over the next 12 months, which is a great way on building equity if you can get in on that property ladder. But in Auckland, it's harder for sellers and their agents to try to attract buyers towards the higher value properties. The expected kick for the first home buyers, you know, kicking them into gear and expanding their budgets from the OCR change, according to McCrory, hasn't been seen. And then we have an article, which is something that we've noticed here in the Manawatū, and I'll just put this into the context a little bit. For a 12-month period up until reasonably recently, we had about 1,600 people move to the Manawatū. The year before that was about 1,000, and the year before that about 1,000 more. So there's been an increase in the number of people moving to the regions, and in particular, Manawatū is quite noticeable. People say, where does all this immigration come from? And the vast majority is from around the country, and that's where this article that was in Stuff Business says tens of thousands of Aucklanders left the city to find cheaper housing. In fact, nearly a net 33,000 Aucklanders have ditched the city for regions over a four-year period. And the reason for doing so, according to Benji Patterson, who's an economist, is in search of cheaper housing. And between June 2013 and June 2017, a net 33,000 Aucklanders moved to the regions, and that trend is expected to continue due to the city's housing affordability issues. The allure of selling an Auckland home to free up equity for a cheaper house in the regions is proving too difficult to resist for many people. Interestingly, about two-thirds of these people actually have gone to Northland, Waikato and Bay of Plenty, although working in the Manawatū market, I see that there's a lot also affecting our market here as well. Patterson said traffic was another contributor to people shunning Auckland, with locals spending about 450 hours a year in a car. 450 hours a year in a car. Unbelievable. Either as a driver or a passenger. Now in Northland it's less than 40, and Waikato just over 120, Wellington 140 and so forth. I dare to say that even if you're living in Fielding and commuting to Palmerston North, you're looking at maybe 20, 25 minutes. If you're living in Palmerston North, it's about 10 minutes. So you can see why people are thinking life's too short to spend 450 hours a year in a car when they could be massively cutting that down. Another interesting thing, recent research by PricewaterhouseCoopers found that a typical Auckland household has $233 a week less spare cash than a Wellington household, and $220 less than in Christchurch compared with a decade ago. And, of course, the price of living here in Palmerston North and a Manawatu is cheaper again. So what that means is that if people move, it's not only getting a more house for their money, but it's also a better lifestyle, better discretionary spending, so to speak. So the number of people in Auckland increased over the period of Patterson's research from 2,727 in 2014 to almost 13,000 people in 2017. I'd love to see what 2018 looked like as well, but that wasn't included in his reports. Some really interesting things there. And Stuff Business also continued this theme, saying that tough times in housing market as Auckland leads the price slowdown. And the prices are mixed generally across Auckland, but the effect that it has on New Zealand is that house price growth is now a third of what it was a year ago. Again, a lot of this is because of the volume. QV has released its latest data, which shows that residential property values increasing 2.3% nationwide in year to May. So it's the price rise is slowing down, because at the same time last year, the annual price growth was 6.9%. So it just shows that Paul McCorry, again, senior consultant, has for QV, has said that more affordable places such as Whanganui and Manawatu and, in inverted commas, lifestyle regions such as Bay of Plenty and Hawke's Bay were seeing strong price growth. But prices were flat in the major centres. Hamilton, Christchurch and Wellington had prices increased by less than 1% over the quarter. So property consultants, salespeople if you like, are reporting that while well-presented and competitively priced homes continue to attract multiple offers, gone are the days where every vendor is guaranteed a handful of sealed envelopes on tender day. Now that hasn't changed here, and we're still getting multiple offers on many properties. And heading over to our friends in Whanganui, the website OneRoof, as quoted in the New Zealand Herald, has said that Whanganui is experiencing the catch-up effect in housing sales. So Whanganui was number 6 on the list of growth areas for house sales in New Zealand and is experiencing what has become known as the catch-up effect. Those of you who have been listening to the show for a while may recall me talking about the fact that the regional markets were very slow from the downturn from the global financial crisis right up until around November 2015. And that's just locally. So you have your larger centres that go up in price first. Palmerston North has gone up and is going up, and now that's spread to Whanganui. So really what they're saying in this article is that when house prices surged in Auckland, buyers moved on to other large urban areas such as Hamilton, Tauranga, Wellington and Dunedin. But after prices in those areas escalated, buyers moved on to the next ring out, which saw inflation begin to surge in places like Rotorua, I should say, Whakatane, Carterton, Upper Hutt, Invercargill and Palmerston North. Now, while the growth rate in those areas is still strong, it is beginning to stall in some of those places, and the median values are above 400,000. So buyers have now moved to the next most affordable areas, with Whanganui currently sitting at number 6, behind Wairoa, Opotiki, Tararua, Kaurau and Hawke's Bay. He says that Whanganui has been one of the, inverted commas, jewels in the crown of the regional North Island for some time, with house values increasing by nearly 50% over the last 5 years, with annual growth sitting at 2.5%, and the median for that area is 265,000. So they're getting a good mixture in Whanganui and in the area of a lot of first home buyers, as well as a lot of investors looking for relatively strong rental returns. And this phenomenon is also a case where investors look further afield for properties that are more self-sustaining or that have a better rate of return. And I hope your day is going well and it's not too rainy. It's been a bit mixed bag here, but let's have some music from Adele. This is Set Fire to the Rain here on Property Matters.
I let it fall. My hands, they were strong, but my knees.
We're back with Property Matters. I'm Greg Watson, and that was Adele with Set Fire to the Rain. Love that song. And with that in mind, we're hoping that if it's a rainy day, wherever you are, that is now clearing up. And I'm going to move on now to some tenant-related matters, or landlord-related matters as well, because there's quite a lot been going on lately, but I just wanted to give you a bit of an update with the market on the rental side of things. Here in Palmerston North, the market is still busy. It is traditionally a slower time of year, but overall there is still a little bit of a gap between supply and demand, meaning that the rents are still quite high when compared to a long-term average. In the Manawatu Whanganui area, rents have increased in a year by an incredible 20%, although the majority of that would be in the outlying regional areas. Palmerston North has certainly moved up, and for anyone who hasn't had their rent checked independently as to where it should be, are quite possibly renting the homes out at the moment for too low or too cheap. In Fielding at the moment, we're still in an incredible situation. This has been going on for at least 6 months, where there's virtually no homes available. I was having a look just the other day on the real estate advertising sites and found that if you wanted to rent a property in Fielding right now, you've only got about 8 properties to choose between. 8 properties, and that's across all price ranges and all sizes. That's not with one company, that's with all companies and the private market. Really incredible, Fielding being very popular, and of course we've got a number of personnel moving to Ohakia soon, which will keep that busyness generally in the market. Just before we go to some renting matters, an article I noticed on tvnz.co.nz on One News was that John Campbell has been visiting and investigating the utterly unsatisfactory conditions at Auckland Caravan Park, where the government is providing accommodation for people who are in need. Phil Twyford, when asked about this by John Campbell, about the conditions at this campground in West Auckland, and saying that they're utterly, Twyford admitted they're utterly unsatisfactory, but the government's doing all it can to solve the housing crisis, he added. So John Campbell recently went to the caravan park in Ranui probably last week now, to take a closer look at the dwellings, some of which cost up to $500 per week despite having been declared unfit as a place for children to live. Units have no toilet, bathroom or stovetop, and only communal facilities and very little space to bring up children. So the camp owner did issue a trespass notice to John Campbell, that is the property manager, I should say, and banned from the property for a couple of years. So the Western Park Village is not a good place for young children, according to Twyford, and he says, unfortunately, there's places all around the country where people are staying that are less than ideal. When Campbell asked what the government is doing to solve the problem, Phil Twyford said, the government has just put $193 million into Housing First to help the long-term homeless into warm, dry, secure housing. We have funded over the next 4 years for 2,700 transitional houses, he responded. In the meantime, the government's putting people up in motels. So he says they're doing everything they can to set standards and provide wraparound support. And one of the best things, he says, that we can do is put money into state housing, and that they're investing $4 billion for state houses in a four-year period. Now, I don't mean to sound cynical, but wow, they spent such a big effort on the Kiwi Build program to help people buy houses. Maybe they should have been investing in building more state houses right from the beginning, because what is needed is more housing, not an easier way to buy housing. So it's nice to see that they are putting some money towards that. It is a huge, huge issue. And that's also talked about in the press from down south in Christchurch, saying that there's a strong social housing need there as well, and there's quake homes unoccupied as the need skyrockets. So there was a temporary housing village in Linwood Park, and there's 34 units remaining there to be removed by June of 2021. But in the meantime, about half of them are sitting empty. So they're sitting empty at this park while this need for social housing in Christchurch City skyrockets. More than 800 people are in the city waiting for a home, and that's considerably more than the 340 that we had in 2016. The government spent almost $750,000 just in the March quarter on emergency grants to house people in motels. Meanwhile, they've got these properties sitting empty. There may be a bit of a crossover there, as the Linwood Park are owned by the Ototahi Community Housing Trust, which says that the government legislation is preventing it from renting the homes for social housing before they're removed permanently. So these 42 homes that were in Linwood Park were there after the February 2011 earthquake, just to house quake refugees. But now, as things are getting sorted out, they're going to transfer ownership to the Housing Trust, and the Trust is going to then move those on. But it just seems strange that they have these places empty while there's people out there who are doing it very, very tough. And that's something which maybe somewhere along the line there needs to be a little bit of flexibility, you would think. Now, one thing I've come across in my line of work is enterprising tenants. Enterprising tenants being tenants who somehow break the tenancy rules in order to make money. And this one was quite interesting, and in terms of what happened. This was a property where a tenant collected more than $60,000 in public money by subletting his rental home to homeless people. So Zain Saeed paid $500 per week to live at a property in South Auckland, which he then didn't live in, but rented out for an average of $3,800 per week. So for 16 weeks, when he was supposed to be the tenant at the property, he didn't live there, and he sublet the home to clients of the Ministry of Social Development, who pays for emergency accommodation for people with nowhere to live. So just to recap that, he rented a house, then moved out and re-rented it for about 7.5 times the amount of money. Quite an enterprising endeavour. However, he has now been ordered to pay his landlord most of what he earned after the Tenancy Tribunal found he'd breached his rental contract. So Syed was renting the property from Barfoot and Thompson between July last year and January of this year. But between August 16th and December the 6th, Ministry of Social Development paid $60,800 to Saeed, or at least a company he owned and controlled, to sublet the property. Saeed then paid his landlord $8,000 in rent during that period, and he didn't have permission to sublet the house. So under the Residential Tenancies Act of 1986, the landlords must give tenants written approval before the tenant can legally sublet a property. The tribunal found that Saeed was in breach of contract by unlawfully subletting the property. Now, here's the interesting bit. It ordered Saeed to pay Barfoot and Thompson, the property managers, $50,000, which is the maximum that the Tenancy Tribunal can award. Barfoot and Thompson are going to forward that on to their client, who is the landlord. But that was really quite an enterprising sort of move, I would have thought, indeed. Another thing to watch out for, a landlord in Auckland, according to Stuff Business, wrongfully evicted tenants from his property after they made complaints of black mould and birds nesting inside. So the tenants, Christy and Kyle Rosby, were issued a 42-day notice to leave the property when Jian Wen, the landlord, claimed he intended to move in. However, according to the tenants, the eviction notice came a few days after they raised the issue of long overdue repairs and maintenance. The residence was described as having a leaking ceiling, resulting in black mould in the kitchen cupboard and walls. The tenants also reported birds nesting in the roof space, as well as other matters. So what happened was the tenants were moved on, and then the property was immediately re-advertised for new tenants, which led them to think something suspicious was up, seeing as though the notice was given under false pretenses. So he gave the wrong notice, and the landlord was ordered to pay $2,200 to the tenants for doing so. So that's something just to be aware of. Make sure that you are serving the right notice at the right time. And that's all we've got time for this week. I'm Greg Watson. You've been listening to Property Matters. It's been fun having you along for the ride, and have a great week until we talk again.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.